This is the Adam Gold Show.
So in Halftime Entertainment, Dennis brought to our attention that Kirstie Alley passed away. That happened yesterday. Earlier today, longtime legendary fight referee Mills Lane passed away at age 85. One of the greatest fight referees of all time. I don't even know how you would rank them, but I do know somebody who knows more about it than anybody I know. Bill Clancy himself, a fight referee, joins us on the Adam Gold Show, my go-to for anything boxing. And I appreciate your time. I know this is a tough time, I think, for anybody in this business, because I'm sure Mills Lane touched everybody. So just real quick, your memories of Mills Lane before we get into some other things about his career.
Well, great man, hell of a referee.
Yeah.
I was lucky enough to take two refereeing seminars from him over the years. Got to know him very, very well. And what you saw in the ring is exactly the way he was in person. No nonsense,
right.
Didn't take any crap from anybody. Little 5'7", 147-pound rocket, man. It didn't matter how big the guys were, they respected him. And a lot of people missing this guy, man. He's a good guy.
I think he had a stroke probably around 20 years ago and basically had to stop
correct.
Refereeing. What makes a great referee?
There's a couple different things, but good judgment is the biggest thing. You got to have great judgment, and that's a pretty broad statement, but you either have good judgment in the ring or you don't. It's something you can't teach, that's for sure. Good judgment, that's the key. That's what's always preached in seminars. It's what I was brought up on, and like I said, you either got it or you don't.
Bill Clancy is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. Other than the seminars you took from Mills Lane, what made him, how else did your paths cross, and what made him a great man? I know he did some other things. He had a goofy TV show where, like he was Judge Judy. But what made Mills Lane such a great man?
You know, he was fair. You know, not too many people know. Some people do know, but he was a circuit court judge in Reno, Nevada. And he had a nickname, Maximum Mills. And the reason he got that nickname, if you went in front of him and you were a criminal and you were found guilty, he was going to give you the max sentence every time. And I remember him telling me this story, how I asked him, because, you know, you're supposed to dress a certain way in the ring. And he's teaching a seminar, and he's telling us how to dress. And I didn't want to say anything in front of anybody. So I waited until we were on break, and I said, Mills, can I ask you a question? He said, you can ask me anything. And I said, I understand how we're supposed to dress. I said, you know, you're not supposed to wear a belt in the ring if you can't, you know, if you can help it. And I said, but you always wear a belt, and you wear a brown belt, which is totally contrast to what we're taught to wear. I said, why do you wear that brown leather belt with the big leather buckle? And he said, let me tell you a story. So he tells me this story about how this guy came in front of him for a triple murder. And he came in front of Mills, and the evidence was overwhelming that he did it. And he expressed remorse for his crime. And Mills said, I really appreciated him accepting responsibility for taking the lives of three people. And he said, I sentenced him to three concurrent life sentences without the possibility of parole. I said, that's a great story. I said, what the hell's that got to do with your belt? He said, while he was in prison, the guy had obviously too much time on his hands, and he took up leather working, and he made that belt for Mills, and he sent it to Mills, and he said, you were more than fair to me in the courtroom. I accept responsibility. I'll never get out of this jail. Would you do me the honor of wearing this belt during one of your fights? And he said he was so taken back by that he wore that belt and he always wore it from that point on. I thought that was a pretty cool story, and especially, you know, how it came about. But he was fair in the courtroom. He was fair in the ring. He didn't put up with any nonsense in his courtroom, nor did he put up with any nonsense in the ring. And he treated everybody fair. It didn't matter who you were, what background you came from. I know when I was an up-and-coming referee, he was my mentor, and he and Arthur Mercanti Sr. were my mentors, and I was fortunate enough they both gave me their telephone numbers and told me to call him anytime. And I can't even tell you how many times that I used to call him, and his secretary would answer and say, well, Mills is on the bench right now. I'll have him call you back when he gets a break. And I'll tell you right now, he called me back every single time. And we talked boxing all the time. He was just a great guy, man, down to earth. You know, he's originally from Georgia. He was born into a pretty affluent family. And they hated the fact that he became a boxer, you know, an amateur boxer in the mm-hmm. service. And then he went on to fight pro and then the legendary refereeing career that he had. But his family was dead set against it. They wanted him to go into the banking business, and he decided to pursue a law degree and became a lawyer and then ultimately a circuit court judge and then on to stardom in the ring. So just a great guy, man. Talk about great stories. Cussed like a sailor. Oh, man, he had a tongue on him, man. But he told the greatest stories. We just got along famously, and I'm going to miss him.
All right, let me ask you this. This is a stupid sports radio question. Where does he go among the great fight referees of all time? You mentioned Arthur Mercanti, who I believe did the first Ali Frazier fight.
Correct.
Carlos Padilla, another legendary fight referee. I remember, grew up, obviously, with Mills Lane and Richard Steele. And Bill Clancy, of course, is on that list. But where does Mills Lane slot?
I tell you, I'm very biased because I literally stole a lot of stuff from him
right.
in my style of refereeing. But he's, without a doubt, he's in the top five. There's no doubt about it. Now, where in that top five, you know, you can argue. This is like arguing, you know, where Michael Jordan would be in terms of the best basketball player. But Mills, you know, people don't really realize, you know, he started refereeing in 1963. He was still fighting as a professional in 1963. His last professional fight that he participated in was in 67. And he had a 35-year refereeing career. But if you look at his body of work, he had less than 300 fights that he refereed, 261, to be honest with you.
Right.
And most of those were world championship fights, obviously, because he lived in the Mecca of boxing. And right. that's he lived in Reno, but did most of his refereeing in Las Vegas. So most of his fights over that 261 fights, 35-year career, were major world title fights. And he was Steady Eddie, man. You knew what every fighter got in that ring with him. They knew they were going to get a fair shake from him. He showed no partiality, contrary to what we just found out about Carlos Padilla, who just got inducted into the Hall of Fame, which I think needs to be revisited
right.
as a result of what he just shared. I think that's criminal, what he did. But and if Mills were alive right now and could speak, you know, for the past 20 years he could speak, but he was very embarrassed because of the stroke and what it did to him, and it, you know, paralyzed his left side, and he had a very difficult time speaking. But I know Mills, and I know news of this. He, before he passed, he found out what happened with Carlos. I guarantee you he had a really stern opinion about what should happen. But, you know, fighters knew what they were getting when they got Mills. They knew they were getting a consummate professional. He could handle himself, and it did not matter how big the guys were. They all respected him. And like I said, I'm going to miss him, man. He was a great guy, awesome referee, and a hell of a mentor. Great guy.
Bill Clancy, I appreciate your time, my friend. Thank you very much. And for those people who don't know, Carlos Padilla, who's from the Philippines, basically admitted that he helped throw a fight or tipped the scales in favor of Manny Pacquiao. Because
word from his own mouth, and it's criminal, and it's a shame, and it's a disgrace to this profession, and I'm embarrassed by what I learned, and I hope that the right thing is done, and in my opinion, he should be stripped of his Hall of Fame induction. It's a disgrace.
Yes, Mills Lane would do that personally if he could. Bill Clancy, you're the man. I appreciate your time. We'll
Thank
talk
you
again.
Guys.
You got it.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Bill Clancy here on the Adam Gold Show. All right, when we come back, how has things changed from a gambling perspective? We like to place bets here every day. And by the way, have I told you that I'm kind of hovering at plus 9,000?
Yeah, it actually you are.
It hasn't gone, like, it's basically steady.
Yeah.
But it's still inching up because I do stupid things that have great value. And every once in a while they hit, and it saves me the, you know, my 0 for 9s don't hurt as much if you hit on a big one.
Yeah.
By the way, yesterday's Korea plus 1,100 wasn't one of them.
That no, didn't it wasn't. Work. It was worth a shot, though.
No, it wasn't. After watching the first 4 minutes of that match,
yeah,
you knew what that was going to be like.
Yeah.
Anyway, but from a gambling perspective, a little bit on the World Cup, but how have the odds changed? We're now basically a third of the way through the NHL season. How have the odds changed for the Hurricanes, for the New Jersey Devils, for the Florida Panthers? Remember, they were the President's Cup trophy winners. Mm-hmm. President's Trophy, not President's Cup. President's Trophy winners as the number one point earner in the NHL last year. They're outside the playoff line right now. So are the Rangers. How have the odds changed there? We'll talk about it next. My friend Michael Lubosky from the Action Network is joining us here. He is a hockey expert, but also a soccer expert and somebody who, before the World Cup, had a semifinal ticket on Japan. First of all, have you recovered from the penalties yesterday?
No. Feels like the World Cup is over for me, man. That was what a thrill ride that team was, and to see them go out, you know, not with a bang, but a terrible penalty kick effort was really a kick in the gut.
Look, they were great, and what I remember from our conversation about it was that you said that Japan is the perfect team to deal with the Germanys and the Spains of the world because they're basically counterattacking, and they were going to have all the possession, and boy, it worked out. Who'd they lose to? Costa Rica. But who also wants to play that way? But they were able to beat Japan and Germany Spain and Germany coming from behind in both matches. All right, I want to talk about the NHL first. So we are now about one-third of the way through, almost at the one-third mark. So how have the odds changed for a team like Colorado that is like in third or fourth place, or a team like the Rangers who are outside of the playoffs, or the Panthers who are outside of the playoffs? How have the odds changed for them?
Yeah, it's funny. The Avalanche haven't really budged all that much. And I think that's because, you know, sports books and odds makers and the market generally knows that this team is just going through a pretty crazy injury cluster. They'll likely be in the playoffs, and once they do, if they're healthy, they'll be fresh and pretty tough to deal with. And you know, the biggest question mark coming into the season with Colorado was the goaltending, and Alexander Georgiev somehow has answered the questions pretty well. And then you know, the Rangers, they've drifted a little bit. We've seen the Panthers drift. The Rangers and Panthers are kind of in that same tier, hanging in the high teens, low 20s. And they've just kind of been pushed down the list by teams like Boston, who is now closing in on Colorado as the clear consensus favorite. Vegas and the Devils, like that if you were to tell me, you know, in the summer that Colorado, Boston, Vegas, and New Jersey would be the 1, 2, 3, 4 on the betting odds here in the first week of December, I probably would have said, you know, I can maybe see two of those, but all four of them, it's a little strange. But I think what the odds are telling us tells us, which is something that we already know, is this season's going to be wide open. There's really no clear runaway team like there was last year.
Michael Leboeuf at the Big Lebowski on Twitter is joining us here. NHL season, again, about to approach the one-third mark. I find it interesting that the Avalanche odds haven't moved, really, but the Devils odds have. Why do you think that is? It's just a realization that, you know what, they've compiled a lot of young talent and they happen to be good.
Yeah, one of the things that happens is that, you know, when a team gets off to a hot start within like the first 2 weeks of the season, you'll see like odds makers, you know, move things pretty tepidly. Mm-hmm. So like the Sabres and the Red Wings, they both got off to pretty good starts this season too, but they never really got in, you know, to like the 40-1 range, whereas the Devils did, and people just kept betting them. So clearly people believed in this team from the get go. And you know, they haven't given us any reason not to believe in them. What I will say is I don't expect this team to, you know, eclipse Boston or Colorado. The Devils could win the President's Trophy by 20 points. And I wouldn't make them the betting favorite to win the Stanley Cup because of their goaltending.
Right.
Compared to the teams that they'll have to beat.
Mike Lebowski, Mike LeBoff at the Big Lebowski on Twitter. Where are the Canes now, based on where they were at the beginning of the season in terms of the betting market?
Yeah, they're kind of in that same situation as Colorado. They haven't really budged. They're fifth or sixth favorite, depending on where you're looking in that 11-1 range. Because you know your team is doing what it always does. They're putting up great 5-on-5 numbers. They're just not finishing they're not getting the goaltending that they got last year. And I think that the betting market would be all over this team if they did drift, because everything checks out. It's the finishing touches around the edges that the Hurricanes need, and they have an in-house finishing touch coming their way. What in a couple months now with Pacioretty?
Yeah, and Teuvo Teravainen came back and played in LA's first game in about 3.5-4 weeks. So that was a good thing to see for Carolina's perspective. Is there a statistic in the NHL that is used most readily to determine these? Do they use possession metrics? What exactly is used, do you think?
Yeah, I think like it's expected goals rate and like high danger chances is the thing that I like to kind of check under the hood with these teams. You know, Carolina rates out great in both of those metrics, because look, if you're consistently creating more high danger scoring chances at 5-on-5 than your opponent, you're gonna give yourself a better chance to win, and especially over the long haul of an 82 game season. So what we'll see is, like, for the Islanders are a good example of this. Like, they're have a decent record, they've passed the eye test, they've got the best goalie in the league this season. Yeah. And odds makers aren't shortening them, reflecting on their record. They're keeping them pretty high up there. They're in like the 40s or the 50s. And that's because their 5-on-5 metrics don't look that great. And so I think that odds makers are willing to take on that risk with a team like the Islanders and keep taking money on them, because these numbers that are kind of powering their models are going to tell them that the Islanders are closer to mediocre than anything. And, you know, you and I know better than most from what we saw with the Rangers last year that, it's a dangerous game to play, because that goaltending, that type of goaltending can really, really mask a lot of problems. We don't have to go too much further into what happened last spring, but it does make them a dangerous team as a long shot, and one that I wouldn't, tell anyone to. You know, I wouldn't argue with people betting on a team like them right now in this range. The same thing with the Winnipeg Jets too, right? With that goaltending that they have there hanging around at a big number too. And even if the rest of their numbers don't look great, you bring that kind of goaltending to the big dance in the spring, look out.
All right, let me just ask you about the World Cup before we have to get out of here. We know who the favorites are. We know that Brazil, based on what we saw, France, on what we have seen, England has played really well. England has to play France. Where's the value? Who are the favorites as you see it?
Yeah, I think, I know they just went down 1-0, but I still think Switzerland could get something out of this game. Then they would have to play Morocco. Like, you know, this is true. Got to rush to get it in, but like, I don't hate a bet right now in Switzerland, to win or to make the semifinals, if you can find it, or to win at their 100-1 right now. I'm seeing just because they can beat Morocco to get to the semifinal, and then all of a sudden you're holding 100-1 ticket. But you, of course, the first step of that would be coming back against this Portugal team that I think is fraud. I say like the Dutch, they're hanging around 14-1, which is where they were to start the tournament. I don't really believe in Argentina. I think that a lot of people are betting into the Messi narrative, or right. The books are they can't fathom the fact that Messi might be walking off the pitch for the final time. And I was impressed with what the Netherlands did against the United States after they were only okay in the group stage. So, you know, the Dutch are a team I would have circled if Switzerland is, if you could find a number on Switzerland right now with them down 1-0. I don't hate that either as a long shot, but I was pretty wrong about a couple teams. Like I didn't think France was going to be this good. And Portugal, I continue to just sink money betting against Portugal, and it looks like that's not going well either.
Well, see, I can't decide if I want Portugal to win without Ronaldo or to lose with him. He's not playing, so, I kind of would like to see them win in spite of Ronaldo's absence, because I got no time for him.
Yeah, this has to make him steam on the sidelines. They're a better team without him, I'll tell you that much.
By the way, the guy who starting in his place scored the goal. Even better. Even better. Michael Leboeuf from the Action Network at the Big Lebowski on Twitter. I'll talk to you soon, my friend. I appreciate your time.
Awesome. Talk soon.
You got it, Michael. Mike Leboeuf. I'm watching the goal. Portugal scored, and I'm getting Mike's name wrong. I'm so good at this. Gosh, who's smoother than me?
It's hard to multitask sometimes, you know?
Yeah. My wife said, I
miss stuff.
My wife says the same thing about me.
Yeah?
Yeah. Multitasking. It's a male problem, apparently.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. Just ask. The fairer sex, they'll tell you. It's a male problem. And I don't really doubt it for a minute.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Spring training is right around the corner. So come for the games and have a ball in Arizona. With world-class resorts, unbeatable dining and nightlife, amazing scenery, and endless outdoor adventure. Make your visit unforgettable. Plan your getaway at myspringtraining.com.